Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:55 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 19th, and today is the day where the Fed could have rolled to the rescue in a white knight fashion for the market, but didn't do so. So that has resulted in an early advance being reversed and the S&P 500 closing at not only the close to the low of the day, but also taking out the lows we saw in early February. There's nobody denying that there's a short-term oversold condition, but there's no evidence yet that a low of more than there's no evidence yet of a pause at all when we simply look at this chart. I tuned into Jay Powell's press conference afterwards. There were a couple of things that stood out to me as being particularly noteworthy, but it's funny how these sorts of things create a sense of almost deja vu. I remember when I worked at Bloomberg all the way back in the early 2000s, I went to visit a bank in Germany to show them how to graph fundamental data, and I sat down with the bank's economist, and we were just moving through the different functionality portions of the Bloomberg terminal, and we were looking at how different aspects lead the economy. And I was trying to highlight to them that the stock market tends to lead the fundamental data. And I'll never forget it, because the economist, who had obviously been in the business considerably longer than I had, was completely resistant to that conclusion, even though it was right there on the screen in front of us that the stock market tended to peak and trough before the economy, that was something that the economist couldn't possibly lend credence to, because they were not used to that looking at the stock market. They were much more attuned to the kinds of things that economists tend to look at. So that's, I thought that was, for me, it was a massive learning experience, because that really highlighted to me the fact that regardless of evidence, that people who have been brought up and have spent their entire careers doing something, that they're incapable of accepting evidence to the contrary, even when it is right in front of them and being pointed out to them. So the Federal Reserve today raised interest rates. Everyone expected them to raise interest rates, but what people were hoping for was that they would say that they're going to pause. Well, they didn't say they're going to pause. They said that they're going to raise interest rates twice next year, but that they'll be data dependent. That was one of the things that that Jay Powell said, was that they have 8 opportunities to act, and that it could be that they'll raise rates at any one of those, and that they will respond to conditions. Well, the stock market is down heavily. They didn't respond to that today, probably because they're not looking at it. Now, the other thing that really stood out to me today, and it's something that I often talk about at the chart seminar, is that because we don't go into the chart seminar with examples, we always ask people, what are they interested in? Where are the big trends that they've witnessed? What is it that they want to look at? That at the end of the second day, I generally speaking try to put together a list of everything that people have looked at, and then highlight to them the things that they have not looked at. Well, the one thing that stood out today in terms of both the Fed's statement and the press conference subsequently was the size of the balance sheet. During the Fed's statement, they said that they had been wondering how they could possibly reduce the size of the balance sheet a number of years ago, and they settled on an autopilot program, and they saw no reason to change it. So that's important, because the size of the Fed's balance sheet has been contracting since January, and it's still contracting, and it's anticipated to contract by $50 billion a month all of next year. So that's an additional $600 billion taken off of the balance sheet next year. Well, one thing that Jeff Gundlach was saying in his webcast last week was that every $200 billion shaved off the balance sheet is the equivalent of a quarter of a basis point hike in interest rates. Therefore, we're not looking at two interest rate hikes next year, we're looking at five and a minimum of three. So that's assuming that the Federal Reserve remains on its path of contracting its balance sheet. Now, a point that I've been making on multiple occasions, it's something that I've been talking about practically ad nauseum, is when we're talking about the size of the balance sheet, the only analog we have is what the ECB did, because the ECB removed $1 trillion from circulation back in 2012. Well, in fact, it was between 2012 and 2014. So, what happened to the European stock market during that time? So, let's just look at that. What happened to the Euro stocks between 2012 and 2014? Well, between 2012 and 2014, the stock market moved higher, but that was in response to the global liquidity situation. In fact, if we look at European economies, they were in fact going through a period where the growth was slowing. Now, we can also look at the central bank totals in 2012 and 2013, and they were still rising. Whereas now, the total is trending down. And what I find particularly interesting is that I looked at this measure just about an hour ago, and it was in positive territory, and right now it's down about $1 billion. And the fact of the matter is, it's been trending down since March. So, this is something that tells us that liquidity conditions globally are tightening. It's not simply a condition in the USA. One thing that we can also say for certain is that the USA is not the epicenter of risk. The epicenter of risk is in Europe and in China, and I think perhaps the other way around. The epicenter of risk is China, and Europe is right there with it, whereas the US economy is still expanding. That is what the Federal Reserve looks at. And their experience is that they're looking at interest rates. And interest rates do have an effect on the economy. The one thing that we've learned from quantitative easing is that it doesn't seem to promote economic growth the way it was anticipated to. But what it is wonderful at is inflating asset prices. So now we're in a period of quantitative tightening. It's not having the same kind of deflationary impact on the economy that we would anticipate, at least initially, but it is having an effect on asset prices. And the fall in asset prices is likely to have a knock-on effect for the wealth effect in the economy. It is going to have a knock-on effect for business sentiment, and eventually that will contribute to a recession. So that's, I think, where we are right now if the Federal Reserve continues on its assigned path. We are at the point right now where the Federal Reserve is going to make a mistake, and I think today was the first evidence of that. Well, the one thing that we know, and it's something that David has been saying for years, is that central banks have killed off more bull markets than any other factor combined. I'm also posting in here today an hour-long interview of Stanley Druckenmiller by Bloomberg. This is the second interview of Druckenmiller I've posted in the last few months. But one thing that is particularly interesting is that he's looking at the exact same lead indicators for a future recession that we tend to look at. And what that really, I think, rams home is that this is common sense stuff. This is not overly difficult to get one's head around. That the simple fact of the matter is that banks are liquidity providers. That's their business. And banks, therefore, should do reasonably well in an expansion. When banks are not doing well, Well, that has to tell us that liquidity is contracting. So banks are not doing well. The S&P 500 banks index had been among the best performing banks index indices in the world from 2009 onwards, and now it increasingly has completing top formation characteristics, and it has been down heavy the last 3 weeks in a row. Now let's look at the regional banks index, because one might argue that the S&P 500 banks index is comprised of big international banks, and the global economy hasn't been doing well. But regional banks look worse, and they have encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean 3 weeks ago. That was a little first step below the type 2 top, and now they're extending the decline. So this is not looking great. Then if we look at home builders, well, it is a bit of a nonsense to look at the S&P 500 home builders because there's only three stocks in it. But this is a downtrend. And when we consider that it was trading at almost 1200 and now it's at 746, this has been a meaningful decline in here this year. I think we really should look at more back history because it had got almost all the way back up to test its peak from 2005. And I think if one had suggested that that was a possibility back in the depths of the crisis and the foreclosure crisis between 2008 and 2012, then you would have been laughed out of court. And yet we also had the acceleration last year. This was a very clear acceleration of the trend, and then it climaxed with a very large downward dynamic. So I think it is certainly an easy conclusion that the uptrend in the home builders is over. The big question is whether we have a low of short-term or medium-term significance, but it's going to be a while before we see that 1200 level again. Then if we look at the auto sector, well, this has also been trending down this year, and it remains under pressure, particularly when we look at companies like Ford that are on the cusp of being downgraded to junk. This is a clear downtrend. So these are also reflective of what's going on in the economy. Then when we look at retail, so perhaps we can look at a retail ETF, and I'll see if I can find one of those. So retail has been at the cusp of break, well, had been at the cusp of breaking out in the middle of this year, and that's now turned into a failed upside break, and now it's coming right back down to the lower side of the range. So the other point, of course, is that it trended higher in a very, very consistent manner until 2015, and has been ranging since, and a broadening pattern after a particularly impressive advance is seldom a reliable continuation pattern. So that's also something that we should be bearing in mind. Well, these are interest rate sensitive sectors where you have banks, autos, retail, and homes all underperforming. Well, that's reflective of the economy, and particularly when you look at the underperformance of the regional banks. Well, that tells us then that there is something underlying here that doesn't look particularly favorable. Then we have the fact that high yield spreads have broken out, and they continue to extend that advance. The junk bond ETFs are breaking down in a meaningful way and continue to extend that decline, and this looks like a bear market. And I don't think there's anything on that chart that suggests that this decline is over. This has been a meaningful breakdown. Well, when we think about these types of conditions, that you've got the yield curve, which has been really contracting for almost 6 years already, and is now at just under 12 basis points. Well, this is already pretty tight. Now, the one thing that has not fallen into place is unemployment. And The unemployment rate is at about 3.7%, and it's been trending down in a meaningful way since 2000, the latter part of 2009. So we're very close to record low levels. It's been certainly been decades since we've seen unemployment at these levels. Well, one would have to think that when this starts to tick upwards, well, then we're going to be very close to a recession in the USA. So the lead indicators that we look for, this is something that Druckenmiller is also saying, are flashing amber. When we were looking at these sorts of things a year ago, well, everything was plain sailing, that we didn't have these indicators flashing, that there still looked like there was time. Whereas now, not only do we have this underperformance in lead indicators, but the stock market itself is under pressure. So the Nasdaq was also breaking downwards in here today, and it is exhibiting relative strength. It is still in the region of the April low, and it's above the February low, but it's unlikely that the Nasdaq is going to continue to be able to hold out if the S&P 500 extends its decline. Now, certainly when we look at these charts, they are not encouraging. But we have to pay some due consideration to the fact that we do have a short-term oversold condition, and we have been down on consecutive days. So that does hold out the potential that we could have a rally. Now, I was looking for a rally in here today, and at about halfway through the day and after the Fed meeting, that hope was certainly punctured. And we definitely have some tax selling as we approach the end of the year. We also have the fact that hedge funds have to liquidate because of redemptions, and it was the middle of the month when they would have got their redemptions, so they have approximately a few weeks in which to do the selling to raise the cash in which to with which to pay people back. Well, the last time we had a decline like this in December was in 2012, and in 2013 we had a big move on the first 3 or 4 days of the year, and the rally persisted all year really, but it didn't look back until March, and that was a pretty mild pullback even then. But back in 2012 and 2013 we were still in a liquidity fueled advance, but we are not in a liquidity fueled advance right now, and that is starting to weigh on asset prices. And I think this is the really big lesson that quantitative easing was good for asset prices. Quantitative tightening is bad for asset prices. Eventually, that is going to have an impact on borrowing because corporations have taken out massive quantities of debt. And the one thing that people have paid very little attention to is that certainly equity financing is more expensive. But once you've sold the shares, you might get some pushback from shareholders, but you can cancel dividends. Whereas you can't cancel bond payments. You can't cancel the coupon payments. You have to continue to make coupon payments. And the more debt you've got, the bigger the coupon payments you have to pay out. Well, that is likely to eventually have an impact on the pace of buybacks. And it has been buybacks have been the animating force behind this liquidity-fueled bull market. It's been buybacks have been the primary avenue through which liquidity can enter the stock market. And a lot of those buybacks have been debt-fueled. So the rising quantity of debt is an important consideration here. Now, we also have the potential that it is defensive sectors are going to continue to outperform, but that's on a relative basis. The Consumer Staples Index was in negative territory in here today. The consumer discretionary sector, which, and I'm trying to find it. That's there we go. So, sorry, I was having a bit of a brain meltdown, trying to remember it. That is now breaking downwards. And this is a major trend in consistency. So when we look at the persistence of that advance from 2009 to now, this has been one of the most consistent trends. We had a wobble at the beginning of 2016, but it rebounded very, very smartly, whereas on this occasion, it broke below the trend mean, ranged below it, and now is extending its decline. So that's something that has to, I think, be highlighted here. When we look at the performance of companies, then it's the kinds of companies that have been turning up on fundamental value screenings over the course of the last few years. L Brands, Hanes Brands, Newell Brands, these have all been popping up on fundamental value screens because of their cash flows. And now Hanes Brands is accelerating lower. But it's trading on a PE of 6 and it has a yield of 4.95. And when we look at its ratios, it's got a price to sales ratio of 0.7. But it's selling into a declining market. Why on earth would anybody buy Hanes when they're relatively more expensive and you can buy the basics from Target or Amazon? So this is one of the victims of disruption, and therefore these value plays are also value traps. Whereas when we also look at Amazon, well, Amazon is the ultimate disruptor, but it was down $56 in here today. Now, Amazon is one of the most owned shares out there, and it needs to hold to that $1,400 area. If Amazon breaks down, then it's going to have a very deleterious effect on investor sentiment, but most particularly among retail investors. So, this is a meaningful, I think this is something we have to pay particular attention to, is Amazon, considering that the strategy that worked best has been to buy the dips. And if buying the dips starts to fail in Amazon, well, then that is going to be I think, a rather big moment in terms of a change of sentiment towards this market. So, we are at a very critical juncture in terms of stock markets, and it is worth considering that Europe, does not look great either. It's been trending down all year, and it has very clear top formation completion characteristics. The A share market in China is largely managed, but it's also still under pressure, and it has got a very consistent downtrend all year. Well, Xi Jinping was in unrepentant mood yesterday, giving his 40-year anniversary talk about China opening. And what is wonderful about communists is that they use talk of opening when in fact what they mean is tightening or closing. They talk about global trade, but what they're actually talking about is global dominion. So, it is the real life example of doublespeak from 1984, which of course is why the book is censored in China. Then, when we look at India generally tends to be somewhat more insulated from the global economy, and it is outperforming right now. Now, when we look at places like Australia, and most particularly property markets in Australia or Canada or the UK, well, they have benefited enormously from quantitative easing, and they are susceptible to to deflation in a quantitative tightening environment. So, that is weighing on the Australian market. Now, when we look at currencies, well, the fact that the USA is continuing on its quantitative tightening, that is going to restrict the availability of dollars. And if we simply talk about supply and demand, then this is a dollar bullish environment. So the Australian dollar was down 81 ticks in here today, and it is likely to at least test the 70 cent level and potentially more than that. The euro, having rallied in early trading, unwound the entire advance, and this is still holding its succession of lower rally highs. And the Japanese yen has also been a little bit weaker in here today, having unwound an earlier rally. So the dollar is bouncing from the lower side of its range. Well, with the dollar starting to perform once more, gold posted a downside key reversal in here today, and this is right in the region of the trend mean. Well, that's a short-term peak for gold. The big question now is whether it can hold its succession of higher reaction lows, but today's action was not bullish. And oil prices, having pulled back extremely violently yesterday, were unchanged in here today, were not able to hold a rally. So I think if we look around the world, what we're presented with is a rather bearish environment, and that there is a very clear pressure coming to bear on asset prices, and that is as a direct response to the Fed's actions. So this is, I think, a rather dangerous environment, particularly as we come into the latter part of the year, where markets generally are thinner. So we're going to likely see some acceleration of trends that have already been underway. But the big test for this market is going to be how it trades in the first couple of weeks of next year. Are people going to reset the clock and come back into buy oversold conditions in these markets in January? That's going to be a big arbiter for this market. But the big overhang for next year is that the Fed has no intention of reducing the pace with which it is contracting its balance sheet. And that is a very meaningful change to this market. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.